It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
3-2 pitch. Fastball belted deep right.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you. It's hour number two on a Monday edition of Overtime. Notice I have not said it's another beautiful day in the neighborhood in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Today, yesterday, yucky. Today, ugh. Not looking great out there. Stay tuned again to our six radio stations in the building, including this one, for the latest and greatest updates on the weather. And certainly Mother Nature letting us hear it yesterday in the 605. Pretty good to hear. Nobody really shaken up yesterday. But scary stuff around this area yesterday in regards to tornado, strong winds, thunderstorm threat. And special thanks to Sean Cable and all the great crew keeping us up to date on the weather here in the 605. Still to come on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Headlines and highlights, latest from the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is returning to the Steelers. What does that say about Rodgers, about Pittsburgh, their chances this year, and what records could fall to Aaron Rodgers and what Aaron Rodgers' records could fall off of him in a bad way if things come unglued this year? We'll dive into that coming up around the corner and more whip-around coverage and the good, the bad, the ugly before we're done on a Monday. Let's start with the ugly loss for the Minnesota Timberwolves over the weekend as we open up the scorecard on Friday. Minnesota mollywopped by the Spurs, 139-109 the final. Jay Williams talking about Ant's antics on Friday night, shaking hands, dapping up the winning team, the Spurs, with 8 minutes to go. Why the heck would he do that? Here's Jay Williams.
You know why he did it? Because they played together. Because he was livid. He was disgusted with the way his team played in a closeout scenario. So you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to get his ass off that court. So a lot of the old school fellas will say to you, well, hey, that's not the way you should do it, young fella. You competed to the end. But when you're competing by yourself, and when you hear players like Naz Reid or Dante DiVincenzo talk about our team is moodiness, they're moody, they're talking about Julius Randle. Mm. It was unacceptable behavior by the Minnesota Timberwolves. I feel horrible for the way they played. Anthony Edwards is one of the most competitive dudes on this planet. The fact that he checked out early lets you know that their team is not like a fierce unit the way the Spurs were.
And again, if you look at the broad strokes of the stats in the game, the things that stood out to me, the turnovers were not an issue for Minnesota. They only turned the basketball over five times. That is a stat that any NBA coach would say that is awesome. Single-digit turnovers or less than five turnovers, that's amazing. For Minnesota, the issue was the rebounding, the effort, the hustle. 60-29, the rebounding disadvantage for Minnesota as their season comes to a close. 139-109. Spurs moving on, winning the series 4-2. Very excited to talk to Darren Wolfson tomorrow on the show, breaking down this team, where they're going, and the hurdles, obstacles in the form of the Nuggets, the Spurs, and of course the Timberwolves in their conference. And then again, there's other teams out there that are on the up and up. You would assume Dallas is only going to get better. There's other teams in the West certainly that are feisty. Where does Minnesota fall in for the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Are they going to be able to meet the moment and seize the momentum in this middle stage of Anthony Edwards' career? Or do they need to start thinking about retooling, reshaping the roster? And there's a lot of people out there with strong opinions, particularly on Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, get him off my team, see what we can get. I want that guy, this guy, these picks, those picks. There's a lot up for debate for Minnesota. Certainly, they're not where we thought they'd be at this stage after a couple nice postseason runs. We continue to expect a little bit better year over year over year. Not the case this year for the Minnesota Timberwolves as the Spurs win Friday night as they will open up the Western Conference Finals tonight. More on that in a moment, but let's get to yesterday's final that saw Cleveland beat up and run over the Detroit Pistons 125-94. They win the series 4-3. Evan Mobley, 21 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. Was the year a disappointment for the Pistons despite pushing it all the way to a game 7 in the second round? Here's Stephen A. Smith with a pretty darn matter-of-fact answer.
Yes, because they didn't make the conference finals. They were the number one seed. They won 60 games, major props to them or whatever. But I'm just talking about their expectations. Once we saw what we saw, particularly from Cade Cunningham emerging as a league MVP candidate, it's not that the result, meaning losing the series, was a disappointment. It's how they went out on your home court in a game seven, down by damn near 40. That's the disappointment. That's where that comes in, because it reminded us of what their deficiencies are. We got to give credit where credit is due to J.B. Bickerstaff, who was my coach of the year. You don't have Malik Beasley because of personal reasons he got himself into. You lose Dennis Schroeder, of course, and Tim Hardaway Jr., and you're looking at Cade Cunningham, and you really, really didn't have a bona fide secondary scorer.
That's Stephen A. Smith on those Detroit Pistons. It sets up the Western Conference Finals. Game one coming up tonight, Spurs and the Thunder. Game one of the East is Cavs and Knicks on Tuesday night. Let's talk about the Spurs' opportunity. It's Brian Windhorst saying, can the Spurs claim the NBA if they can get by OKC and then finish the job in the finals?
I think they might be ready, because I thought the same thing. And throughout the postseason, I have watched them face a little bit of adversity and always show poise and always answer. They had Wembanyama get the concussion in the first series, got ejected in the second series. They've had tough road games that they've risen up from behind and won. This really, to me, is a referendum on whether or not it's Victor Wembanyama's league. I believe it will be a league that he owns at some point. Maybe that some point is now. This is a great opportunity. This series, your fate. By the way, the injury report is clean. We're going to have everybody in this series, including Jalen Williams coming back from the hamstring injury. This is exactly what you want. They're both reasonably rested. There is no reason that this shouldn't be as high level basketball as we've seen.
And again, high regards for a series that begins tonight. Spurs and the Thunder from OKC, 7:30 on NBC. The Thunder, 6.5-point favorite in game one. Game one is Tuesday night in the East. Cavs and the Knicks from MSG, 7 o'clock on ESPN tomorrow. Tomorrow night, New York favored by 7.5. Antonio Daniels talking about Jalen Brunson, Carl Anthony Towns, and what needs to go on in this series for the Knicks to handle their business and move on to the NBA Finals.
In the Eastern Conference, there's a difference between best and most impact, because I think Jalen Brunson is the best player in that series. But I think for the New York Knicks to advance to the NBA Finals, Carl Anthony Towns needs to be the most impactful.
There you go. Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow night, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Stanley Cup playoffs continuing right now as we're shaping up for the Conference Finals. We got five teams still alive as Buffalo surprisingly blitzed beyond Montreal on Saturday night to extend it to a 7-game series, 8-3 the final. Jack Quinn had 2 goals and an assist in the victory. Game 7 tonight from Buffalo, 6:30 on ESPN. The Sabres favored -120 on the puck line. Some keys for tonight's matchup in Game 7. Here's PK Subban.
For Buffalo, you got to manage the energy in that building. It's going to be a ton of energy. The fans have been waiting for this moment for a long time, and they can't afford to sit back. Their defense got active in game 6. When their defense are active, they're a different team. So for them, they got to skate. They got to be the faster team tonight.
That's PK Subban. Some keys. Game 7 tonight, Canadiens and Sabres for the final spot in the Final Four. 6:30 on ESPN. Western Conference Finals begin on Wednesday night. Golden Knights at the Avalanche, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado, of course, predictably marginally favored. Game 1, -190 on the puck line. USHL hockey over the weekend. Clark Cup Finals off and running in the best way possible for the Sioux Falls Stampede. They're up 2-0. Took a win against Muskegon game 1 on Friday, 3-1. Came back and did it again Saturday night, 3-0 the final. So Sioux Falls 1 win away from clinching their 4th ever Clark Cup title. Game 3 Friday night from Muskegon, Michigan, 6:10 Central, the start time. Minnesota Twins back in the win column yesterday. They moved to 21-26. With another victory and a gem from Bailey Ober, who moved his record to 5-2. But the offense, a big reason why Twins scored a win yesterday.
Jeffers crushes into left field. Back to the track, to the wall. Out of here! Jeffers gives the Twins a 4-3 lead. His 7th homer of the year.
21-26, the new record for Minnesota. They hang on to that 4-3 lead, win the game 5-4. Bailey Ober on the latest outing on the mound.
Yeah, credit, honestly, the defense. I feel like they made a lot of plays behind me. I didn't have really any of my stuff today, so credit Vic and my defense just being able to contain me and help me get out of some innings.
Twins manager Derek Shelton on the victory that has moved Minnesota out of the cellar in the division.
I think they did. I mean, we're talking about one of the elite teams in the National League. And and they put a ton of pressure on you. They do a lot of things right, and fortunately, you know, the last couple of days, one-run games that didn't go our way, and today we were able to capitalize, you know, on a mistake they made, ball going into our dugout, Cody being able to score, and then held on at the end with our pitching, which it was a good victory for us.
So the Twins moved to 21-26. Right now they are the third-place team in the American League Central. Cleveland is starting to get their footing, as are the Chicago White Sox in second place. Cleveland 26-22. One game better than the White Sox. Twins are 4.5 games back, and then the Tigers and Royals struggling. Those two teams combined have won 5 of their last 20 games. Detroit 20-27, identical record for Kansas City. Minnesota playing a little bit better and even split. Over their last 10, Minnesota is 5-5. Other notable finals from yesterday, Detroit lost to Toronto 4-1. Chicago Cubs lost to the Chicago White Sox 9-8 in extras on the south side. And Kansas City beat St. Louis 2-0. Yesterday's final. Today and tonight, Guardians and Tigers 5:40 on Fox Sports 1. Twins open up a series against the Houston Astros, who have a long list of injury concerns. 6 o'clock pregame, 6:40 the official start time right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. NASCAR wrapped up All-Star Weekend and everything pointing ahead to the race at Charlotte Motor Speedway, 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon next weekend. That'll be televised on Prime Video and HBO. And let's talk about the National Football League. Michelle Smallman says, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is back. That's all fine and dandy, but I'd rather see this from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I would say, now that you have Mike McCarthy as your head coach, noted quarterback guru, I would be more excited about the outlook of the season if I could see what Will Howard was and what Mike McCarthy could do with developing him. Because I don't think that the Steelers are going to be Super Bowl contenders with or without Aaron Rodgers. And to his credit, he's done a good job mentoring the young quarterbacks. He had a good season with them last year. No drama. He was out of the headlines. But if I'm Pittsburgh, I don't know why I waited this long for a situation where it doesn't really change the way I feel about my chances of winning a Super Bowl. And it certainly doesn't get me closer to finding out who that next quarterback is going to be for our organization.
You know, I will push back just a tiny bit. I understand what Michelle Smallman's saying. There might be some fans saying, throw the kid in there, see what he's got, find out about Howard, then find out about Aller. Let's do it and find out in a hurry so we can draft a quarterback next year if we need to. But if we're going to credit Mike McCarthy for being a veteran coach who knows a lot about quarterbacks and can develop quarterbacks and develop Aaron Rodgers, which he did when he had Brett Favre on the roster, we also need to trust the coach about the readiness of the youngsters and maybe the signing of Rodgers, the waiting for Rodgers to maybe possibly just maybe sign, is telling you all you need to know about the readiness of Will Howard and Drew Allard. Not now, maybe not ever, but not now. We need Rodgers in here. We need a veteran figurehead, guy who can go win games, and somebody to coach these guys up and show how to prep like a pro and go through all that Rodgers goes through to be out there on the football field, prepared, ready to shine, and lead the Steelers back to another 10-7 finish and first-round playoff exit. I joke, of course, but I think that might be a pretty telling indictment here. McCarthy's got two quarterbacks in-house. They have a veteran in Mason Rudolph who's not going to go out and win games like Rodgers will, but a steady veteran. Maybe Howard's not ready. Maybe Aller, since they had to tear him down to the studs and completely rewire everything he's ever learned in college, that was a report last week, maybe it's not something to be excited about right now in Pittsburgh. And you got to trust McCarthy and say, need to get a veteran in here, coach these guys up, get them to a place where I'm comfortable, and then we'll know when to go with one of these guys, if at all, to go with one of these guys in the future. That's all from the NFL for now. Aaron Rye was your PGA Championship winner. First non-American to win a Wanamaker Trophy in a decade. Did so at 9 under par. John Rahm and Alex Smalley were second at 6 under. And then your softball and baseball recaps over the weekend. D2 softball, Augustana bowed out with a 1-2 record over the weekend. They beat St. Cloud State Friday, fell to Southern Arkansas for loss number 2 in the regional round. Augie concludes the season at 31-28 in another NSIC tournament winning season. D1 softball, I think Nebraska officially checked the box. On the map, good enough to be here, proved it with a win over Louisville, nearly got the job done against Grand Canyon, but they fall to the Lopers of Grand Canyon University on the Saturday game at 2. 5-4 in 8 innings, USD concludes the softball season, a memorable, historic one, with a record of 21-36-1. D2 baseball, Augustana fell to the Gorillas of Pittsburgh State on Friday, got back on the horse Saturday with a win over Arkansas Tech 5-2, then turned around and played the Gorillas again. Elimination game for Augustana, beat them 10-8 on Sunday, set up a winner-take-all scenario, and Augie did it again, 13-7 the final score. Augie now on once again to the Super Regional round that begins on Thursday. They'll face off with Central Missouri Thursday, Friday, Saturday, if necessary, for a best-of-three series. History continued to be rewritten for USD softball on day two of the Lincoln Regional at the NCAA tournament on Saturday. Yotes earned a comeback victory over 25th-ranked Louisville for the program's first-ever tournament win and victory over an ACC opponent. The Nightcaps saw USD fall to quality Grand Canyon in extras, ending a historic run for the team. But if you watched any of it or the highlights, you could see USD was getting after it, a confident group. And this is a bar-raising kind of team. You reach a first. Can't wait to see what's ahead for USD. Full recap at GoYotes.com. Augie softball has been there and done that, and they got back there and nearly did that this year. Augie softball saw their season come to a close on the campus of Missouri Southern on Friday night after knocking off 20th-ranked St. Cloud State. Vikings fell 11-5 to 9-seed Southern Arkansas. Game one, a 4-0 victory. Game two, an 11-6 loss. You can view a recap of that and season recap at GoAugie.com. Augie baseball season recap won't be out for a nice long time because they're moving on, continuing to dance into the Super Regional round. Augie baseball wasn't quite ready for the season to be over. Brandon Weigel was the guy offensively, going 5-for-6 with 3 runs scored, 3 RBI, 3 doubles, a homer, and finished with a triple short of the cycle. Troy Berg had 3 hits, and Jake Lundquist and Kobe Eichmeyer each had 2 hits apiece. Joel Vanderstroke got it out 5 innings in the winner take all on Sunday against Pittsburgh State, allowed 4 runs and 5 hits while striking out a pair. Jack Sutton walked all 3 batters he faced, allowed a pair of runs. Mariano Gomez entered with the bases full and nobody out and showed grit, striking out 6 over 3 1/3 while allowing just a run. All sorts of highlights and accolades and adoration moving forward for Augustana baseball. We'll be talking with head coach Tim Huber for a preview of the best of three series ahead with Central Missouri. That action Thursday, Friday, and Saturday if necessary. Jackrabbits fell to Omaha to conclude the regular season 13-8 on Saturday, and now they are the 4 seed at the Summit League Baseball Championship coming up in the middle of the week. They'll face off with top seed Oral Roberts at noon on Wednesday. Omaha is the 2nd seed and will meet Northern Colorado 6 p.m. that night. Action is from Minneapolis. And lastly, concluding your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number two, Illinois and head coach Brad Underwood have agreed to a new contract, a new financial terms on the current 6-year contract that runs through 2032. Deal could extend as far as 2036 based on the team's performance over the next 4 seasons. The Illini won the 4th most games in program history with an overall mark of 29-8 this last year, finished in a 3-way tie for 2nd in the Big Ten at 15-5. They won each of their first 4 NCAA tournament games by double digits before losing and bowing out to UConn 71-62 in the Final Four, a.k.a. the National Semifinals. Brad Underwood, a raise and new financial terms in his contract, 193 wins against 110 losses in 9 years in Champaign, as well as 6 straight NCAA tournament appearances. That is the latest and greatest news and centered in on your local and regional headlines and your ReliaBank headlines of the day. As always, for a better local banking option, check them out online or in person at ReliaBank.com. When we come back, we'll dive right in to the NFL talk. Aaron Rodgers is back. Of course, with longevity comes a lot of record opportunities. Here is the latest record that Rodgers could break. He could get by Peyton Manning for all-time touchdown passes. But what if I told you that by coming back, Rodgers might lose a couple of records he's held for a very long time? We'll dive into that and more coming up next on a Monday edition of Overtime.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Mm-hmm.
Right back with you on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Still to come immediately ahead, the latest from the NFL. Big headline over the weekend, Aaron Rodgers has finally made his decision known about his future. He'll be back with the Pittsburgh Steelers with a massive pay raise. 1 year, $25 million deal, up to $25 million for Aaron Rodgers, a 42, soon to be 43-year-old. Heading back to the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'll dive into that news, what it means, and records that could fall, good and bad, for Rodgers in just a moment. Whip around coverage in the good, the bad, the ugly before we're done on a Monday. Reminder, this week we'll be welcoming in several new personalities to the show, including folks that cover the Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, as we recap the NFL draft, rookie minicamp, what's ahead for those pair of AFC West franchises, and of course we'll be hearing from one of our favorites, Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities tomorrow on the Tuesday edition of the show. Let's talk about Aaron Charles Rodgers, shall we? A lot of people saying, please, let's not. It's over. Let's talk about him quickly and what the decision means. He's not done yet. After another prolonged decision-making process, of course, prolonged, very underserved word in that use, the four-time MVP has signed a one-year deal with Pittsburgh. Deal is worth up to $25 million, sources told Adam Schefter, and is expected to include a base salary around $22 and $23 million, with a few million more in incentives for the 42-year-old who recently returned to the Pittsburgh area ahead of today's OTAs and was seen getting ice cream with several teammates at a local shop Friday night. The signing comes weeks after the Steelers placed a strange UFA tender on Rodgers in a procedural move that would either give him the compensatory pick if he signed elsewhere before training camp or restrict his ability to sign with another team until camp begins. The Steelers remain confident and in communication with Rodgers throughout the process, and now he slides in firmly as the starting quarterback in the immediate future plans at the position. Rodgers is 42, going on 43. At best, you would think he's got 1, 2, maybe 3 years left, although I'll always remember fondly, and I don't mean that, but I'll always remember Rodgers being asked about Tom Brady back when Rodgers was on Green Bay. Brady was played age 45, and somebody said, any chance you're going to play till 45? And Rodgers looks aside eyes and says, no way in hell. I would never play to 45 years old. That is nuts. And now we're going to see 43-year-old Aaron Rodgers this fall, but you got to like it. You got to love it. Anytime you have a legend coming back to prolong a career, he's not great anymore, but he still has those big moments. The Ravens game in the finale last year, playoffs on the line. He got the job done several times, and his defense was letting him down in the process. But Rodgers, better than Lamar that night on a big stage. So Rodgers now moving forward this fall. I think the Steelers are still very much in the mix in that division. Now, that whole division has taken quite a monumental step back to where it once was. With the Ravens kind of stubbing their toe lately, the Browns being the Browns, the Bengals can't get out of their own way. I like the Steelers just about as much as I like any team in that division based on the team. There are two offenses ahead of Pittsburgh right now in Baltimore and Cincinnati. Cleveland's offense might be a little bit resurgent. Couple rookie receivers, nice couple young running backs up front. They need offensive line to be figured out there in Cleveland. But overall, as a team, coach, personnel, players that are there, I like the Steelers and what they did this offseason. They got better at running back. They said so long to Gainwell. Welcome in Rico Dowdle. They should maybe get a little bit of boost from Caleb Johnson out of Iowa. You remember him. He was a no-show in his rookie year. Maybe he'll improve and compete for some snaps with Jaylen Warren. At tight end, they've got two, three really pretty decent options there at tight end. And a receiver, they had a Michael Pittman, who last time I checked is way better than a Ben Skowronek or a Marquez Valdez-Scantling. I like what the Steelers did this offseason to accentuate the roster just a bit to be better than last year. Better than last year might only lead to 11 wins for Aaron Rodgers and maybe another first-round exit. And we're exactly where we were entering this offseason, talking about how can this team get over the hump? How can this team get better? But I do think that Rodgers was the best option that they had in the bed in which the way they made it this offseason centered around a return for Aaron Rodgers, and that is exactly what they get, a deal worth up to $25 million for 1 year of Aaron Rodgers. Now, I like deep dives and statistical deep dives, and Pro Football Talk did the work for me on this one. Aaron Rodgers is likely to move ahead of Peyton Manning for the third most touchdown passes in the history of the league. Rodgers has thrown 527. Manning retired with 539. So he needs 13 touchdown passes to move ahead of Peyton Manning for third all time. As long as Rodgers stays healthy, PFT noting, he should eclipse Manning's career total early in the season. Rodgers would also likely need to play two more seasons to move into second place, which is occupied by Drew Brees with 571. Tom Brady, 649. Not really touchable for Aaron Rodgers. Now, the other interesting thing here is what you lose by returning. And Rodgers has always been the most efficient quarterback in the history of the league. Statistics love Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers seemingly loves being that way. Very careful with the football. But he could lose a couple interesting things here record-wise. Rodgers could lose a couple career records he currently holds. Rodgers and quarterback for the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, both have the record for career passer rating right now. 102.2, best to ever do it in the eyes of the stat machines. 102.2, Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. Last year, Lamar's passer rating was north of that. Rodgers was south of that. So if they play at the same rate, you would imagine Rodgers could squander that record. And who knows? Rodgers retires. Lamar fades down the stretch of his career a bit. Rodgers could end up being the holder of that record once more. The other interesting thing, though, is that Rodgers also holds the record for touchdown to interception ratio, interception rate, rather. The record there, Rodgers holds that for the lowest interception percentage in the history of the league. The other names on this are pretty darn unique. Rodgers is barely ahead with a record of 1.41% of his throws intercepted. Rodgers barely ahead of Cardinals' current starting quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, who has a career interception percentage of 1.42, and he's not too far ahead of Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, and Pat Mahomes. Ultimately, Rodgers likely to get by Peyton Manning third all-time in touchdown passes, but also likely to fall in a couple records of efficiency he's held throughout his tremendous NFL career. Other news to get to, let's head south to the New Orleans Saints. They got a couple big veterans that are on the checklist this offseason, one of which is Cam Jordan, that the New Orleans Saints reportedly have an offer on the table. Defensive end Cam Jordan has talked about leaving the door open to returning to the Saints for year number 16. And he said there is a contract offer on the table, he being general manager Mickey Loomis. Jordan hasn't signed the contract, and that suggests he's looking for something more from the Saints or someone else before making any commitment for the coming season. And it doesn't look like Taysom Hill will be back in a Saints uniform. Loomis said there is no offer out to Hill, and Hill's emotional words after the final home game last year kind of signaled that that may have been his final game with the team. And the obvious landing spot for Taysom Hill, swan song of his career, will be out with his buddy, old ball coach Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos. But again, that Swiss Army knife might not be a one-for-one fit and role in Denver, but that feels like the obvious spot. Should Hill want to continue a career, pursue other opportunities, Denver certainly could be a fit there. Now, what the heck is going on with Alvin Kamara? Used to be one of the top backs in the league from a talent and do-it-all perspective. Had a down year and now has been replaced on the roster by Travis Aitchen, who comes over from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Running back Alvin Kamara sounds like he wants to be with the Saints next year, but it remains less than a sure thing is how it all plays out. Pro Football Talk also on the news. Kamara currently under contract, but the signing of Aitchen in free agency and a contract tweak that makes it easier to part ways with him after June 1st have clouded the veteran's future with the team. Mickey Loomis saying via Luke Johnson of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, we're just trying to see how he's going to fit on our roster. Obviously, there's a resource management element. We'll get to that over the next week or two. Resource management element. Are they waiting to June 1st to go ahead and officially cut Alvin Kamara? Is that what they're doing here? That feels like it. We'll see. But they've got Devin Neal, young running back on the roster. They've got, of course, their RB1. They're paying him buku bucks to be that guy in Travis Aitchen, who comes in from Jacksonville. So Kamara might not fit. Could be an elite change of pace, third down back, pass-catching scenario back still in his career. But Kamara still makes some of the premium dollars for the position in the NFL at running back. Might not be a fit in New Orleans. It might just be a very cuttable contract. We'll see if they work out a pay cut for him to stick around. The Super Bowl in 2030 has a home. Nashville, expected to be named host of the Super Bowl in 2030 by the NFL owners, who will vote for the city on Tuesday during the spring league meetings. This would be the first time the Music City would host the big game, with the event showcasing the Titans' new stadium, which is expected to be open in 2027. So we'll set the stage here. The next Super Bowl, 61, will be in Inglewood, California, SoFi Stadium. The event will air on ESPN with a simulcast on ABC. In 2028, Super Bowl returns to Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 2029, Las Vegas. 2030, likely to be Nashville, as of an announcement just this morning. Now, other news to get into. This is pretty interesting. The NFL is defending its expanded lineup of games on streaming platforms amid criticism from the president and scrutiny from the U.S. Justice Department. While discussing this week's schedule release with reporters, NFL Executive Vice President of Media Distribution Hans Schroeder on Friday suggested the league has no intention of pulling back from its partnerships with streaming services. "We love our model," he said. "We think we have the most fan-friendly model there is of any sport or entertainment as far as distribution." That might be true, and I understand a lot of us miss the days with CBS, Fox, ABC, NBC, ESPN, some sort of amalgamation of those networks controlling the majority of games. But if you recall, in the NFL, there are a lot of games on Sunday, and it's always been a little bit of a hurdle, whether it be DirecTV with the Sunday ticket package or whatever resources are out now with YouTube TV and Prime Video and Netflix and Peacock occasionally. Peacock! It's been interesting the way it's evolved, but I will give the NFL credit for one thing here. And I might be a contrarian, but I still think we have a wealth of games that are free on broadcast networks, CBS, NBC, Fox, and ABC. And that number actually is 87%. The National Football League airs 87% of their games on free broadcast networks, according to league officials. But Schroeder argued that the league is actually meeting consumers where they are in an era of cord cutting by adding games on platforms such as Netflix. "We think broadcast networks have an incredible home. And now we also know fans are increasingly spending their time on other platforms as well. They tune into broadcast for the NFL, and that's where they want to be. But we also want to be on these platforms with a limited amount of our games where we know NFL fans are already as well. When we're going to Netflix, we're looking for a platform that is already massively adopted and a huge number of viewers on that platform already, including a huge number of NFL fans. It doesn't feel like they're throwing crazy hurdles at us, as crazy as they could be. It's not obscure streaming network that's just trying to get one NFL game to build their viewership, and everybody signs up for a 7-day free trial and has an alert on their phone after 6 days to cancel out of that thing. The NFL still has a very robust local delivery." And I will say, the cord cutting era is interesting in retrospect. It feels like we're right back to cable. It's right back to everything we complained about. You got to have this. You got to have that. It's getting expensive. I got this app. I got that app. I got this there and that. Got an antenna hooked up to the wall. The availability terrestrially via antenna, still pretty strong for the NFL. I will tell you this, as much as I'm defending the NFL here, it is a little bit of the pain in the butt lately with Netflix and Amazon and everybody else out there. You got to have this. You got to have that in order to watch every single game. But as long as it doesn't get worse, which is not a guarantee, as long as it doesn't get worse, I feel like we're in a pretty decent spot still with the National Football League, based on how much we adore the NFL. It's become our pastime. Number one, a top sport without a doubt. But yes, the availability has become a little rocky. The NFL defending themselves, talking about meeting customers where they are. I think customers would prefer the free broadcast network element. But if you are going to go out there and make money and expand your coverage and global outreach and et cetera, the NFL is going to continue to move incrementally this way. Hopefully that number stays pretty darn impressive moving forward. 87% still, according to the NFL. Take it for what that is. But according to the NFL, 87% still on free TV networks. That is the latest and greatest from the National Football League. When we come back, we'll whip around the sports world. Some injury updates are upsetting the apple cart in Major League Baseball. We'll also dive right into the good, the bad, and the ugly as we prepare you to say so long to the Monday edition of Overtime. Monday, May 18th show continues next, right after this on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. We'll be right back.
1.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Just about time to hit you with this leadoff edition of The Good, The Bad, The Ugly, brought to you by Lewis Drug, Lewis Lawn and Garden. We will be talking about the serious momentum for a 24-team college football playoff, which feels like, oh my gosh, pie in the sky. How weird is that? How crazy is that? But FCS college football, what we cover predominantly here with the Jacks and the Yotes, has done that for years and done it really darn well. So pardon me if it feels normal to throw 24 teams into a postseason, because we've been seeing that for a while and we've been enjoying the fruits of that system in the FCS level. Will it work in the FBS? Will it be amazing? We'll wait and see. It's all about the execution and the rules. I was talking to some people over the weekend about the possibility for expansion. And yes, there is no doubt about it. It will devalue elements of the regular season. Will a loss mean as much early in the year? No. Will big wins mean as much early in the year? No. But is it still football in the fall as the leaves turn, the pomp and circumstance, the band on the field, everything that goes with college football? I don't care. I will watch the regular season the same. I will be buttoned up and ready to rumble in the postseason and welcome in some new blood, new teams, teams that are deserving, teams that have a little teensy-weensy chance of winning it all. Getting a seat at the table, 24 to me sounds like fun. My biggest issue is I don't want the big kids on the sandbox. I don't want there to be a 2-year-old, another 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 3-year-old in the sandbox, and then the Big Ten and the SEC hop in there as 9 and 10-year-olds and say, we get all the toys right now. We get all the spots in the college football playoff. I have an issue more so in execution with the Big Ten and the SEC having guaranteed playoff spots. And if we get this team in the top 15, by my metric, we're going to get this team, this team, this team, and this team. I want 8 guaranteed spots for the SEC, 8 guaranteed spots for the Big Ten. Then the rest of you guys fight it out for the remaining crumbs of toys in the sandbox, if you will. I don't want that. I want it to be relatively fluid and say, hey, we're going to take the top 24 teams. If Notre Dame's in the top 24, they're in. We're going to take the top teams here and there, and we can have some floors, maybe. We can talk about, okay, no less than 3 Big Ten teams, no less than 3 SEC teams, but there should not be no less than 8 or 9 or 10, because we're the SEC, and it just means more, baby. I don't want that. I want a really fair, big, expansive 24-team playoff. If we're going that way at all, I feel like right now we're in a good spot. We could be in a great spot with 24, and I also think something else that'll make this all work to where we don't have the disruption of the bowl season is, why not structure it similarly to what we do in the FCS, where you earn a home playoff game or 2 home playoff games in a 4-team pod? There's a lot of pie in the sky here, but we'll break it down right now with The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, brought to you by Lewis Drug and your Lewis Lawn and Garden Center.
Who's been the problem child today? Displayed their ugly side? Whined a bit too much and is now setting a bad example? Bert is calling out today's headline makers with The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, brought to you by Lewis Drug. There are many locations in the Sioux Empire and Lewis Lawn and Garden Center. It is time. I know at least half of you out there listening have an old rusty, trusty grill that might be questionable for the grilling season or on its last legs. It's time. Head on over to Lewis right now. Charbroil 5-burner grill, just $249.97. Nobody beats the price at Lewis Drug. This grill, typically $500. The Amplifier cooking system takes your cookouts to another level with more control, more confidence, and a juicier, flavor-packed food experience. Electronic ignition for a reliable start every time. Typically $500, you can grab a Charbroil Performance Series 5 burner gas grill for just $250 right now. Last time I checked my math skills, That is Half Price. Aaron Rye's first career major victory at the PGA Championship on Sunday will go down as one of the biggest long shot wins in golf betting history. DraftKings Sportsbook reported it had Rye at 290-1 to win the Wanamaker Trophy on Thursday morning just before the tournament at Aronimink Golf Club. Also took a $288 wager at those odds that paid out $66,000. At those odds, according to ESPN Research, Rye is the biggest long shot to win a major in at least the past 20 years, surpassing Phil Mickelson recently at the 2021 PGA Championship and Louis Oosthuizen at the 2010 Open Championship. Both of those golfers in those specific tournaments were 200-1, Rye 290-1 just over the weekend. A stat correction issued on Sunday awarded Caitlin Clark with two more assists for her game against the Mystics on Friday night, pushing her total from 8-10 and helping her set a WNBA career record already in the process. After earning the record in a strange manner, the third year Fever guard went out and extended it on Sunday. That had to be a first. That's a good point, Clark said with a chuckle. Against the Mystics, Clark had her WNBA record 11th career game with at least 20 points and 10 assists, breaking a tie with Courtney Vandersloot. Clark pushed that number to 12 with an 89-78 win over the Storm on Sunday with 21-10, adding 7 rebounds in only 24 minutes. Was her fourth straight game with 20 or more points and 5 or more assists, tied for the longest streak to start a season in the history of the WNBA. Those record books, there's no sense in closing them because Caitlin Clark is just paging through and finding new spots to carve out her new accomplishments. Other good news, but also bad news. We're getting old, people. Charles Woodson Jr. is on the spot, on the scene, following in the legendary footsteps of his father, committing to play at the University of Michigan. A four-star defensive back, Woodson will head to Ann Arbor, where his father, also Charles Woodson, won the 1997 Heisman Trophy. Michigan extended an offer last summer to Woodson Jr., 5'11", 160-pound defensive back from Orlando, Florida. Along with the Wolverines, he had offers from Florida State, Iowa State, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Syracuse, and A&M, Texas A&M, among others. Coach Kyle Whittingham, in his first year at Michigan, lands a legacy name in Ann Arbor to go with a 2027 class that includes 5 players ranked inside the SC Next 300. Again, the rankings only mean so much, but that is a notable name back in blue. I'm not going to say G.O. blue, but back in blue for Charles Woodson Jr. Bad news, Houston Astros second baseman Jose Altuve has a grade 2 left oblique strain and will be placed on the injured list, according to manager Joe Espada yesterday, meaning Altuve will be out of the lineup for the series with the Twins that begins tonight. Altuve had an MRI following an awkward swing in which he didn't run after hitting a grounder to third base in the 8th inning of Saturday's win against the Rangers. He did not play on Sunday, heading to the injured list with a grade 2 left oblique strain moving forward. Other news, bad news, ugly news, Urban Meyer's tenure with the Jaguars. Remember that? Yeah, me either. More than 5 years after Meyer's disastrous stint as an NFL head coach ended up following only 13 games, he has received a decision as to whether or not the Jaguars owe him a buyout. They do not. Pro Football Talk on the news, Brett McMurphy of On3.com. Jacksonville won the case over whether Meyer's conduct justified a firing with cause. The decision saved the Jags more than $30 million. According to the report, witnesses included Meyer, Jaguars long snapper Ross Mastisic, Jaguars punter Logan Cook, former Jaguars kicker Josh Lambeau, and former Jaguars GM Trent Baalke. Meyer's tenure included $300,000 in fines for the violation of off-season workout rules, the notorious decision to skip the team flight home after a Thursday night game in Cincy, and an unfortunate viral video that night, if you know, you know, and the allegation from Lambeau that Meyer kicked the kicker during a training camp practice. All sorts of ugly, all sorts of bad. 13 games, probably too long for Urban Meyer. Disaster in Jacksonville. That's been a relative hallmark for the Jags in recent memory. Feel like they got it figured out now with Liam Cohen and others in-house. But yuck, no retribution, no other pay owed from the Jaguars to Meyer. $30 million not going to be paid as firing with cause upheld over the weekend. And lastly, 2014 playoff outside the meeting rooms at a swanky resort in Southern California. The Big Ten Conference displayed some signature art for the league's annual meetings. It prominently featured three of the national championship trophies won by the conference this year: Indiana's football trophy, basketball trophies by UCLA's women, and Michigan's men. Coming off three consecutive national titles in football, the Big Ten's voice will be heard louder this offseason. Now, as we dive into the 2014 college football playoff, it's clear from the early snippets that the Big Ten coaches remain convicted on moving to a 2014 model, an idea that began in the conference less than a year ago and has gained support across the ACC and Big 12. We're waiting on the SEC. Whether the idea gains traction there will be a question that looms over the sport next week, as it's clearly the model favored by the Big Ten and Commissioner Tony Petitti. Minnesota head coach PJ Fleck said the popularity comes from the goal of having more meaningful November games across the league. The idea would also coincide with other changes, including the elimination of conference title games and moving the start of the season to week zero. Would also mean the college football season would have to end earlier, as the upcoming season culminates January 25th of 2027. So the model of 24 is fine. Like I said in the lead in here, I just want them to get the process right. It might not be a 1 year deal. I'm going to do my best to be patient. Hope you do also. But if they go to 24, I'm okay with the move to 24 because the FCS model is so great. We love that here. And yeah, generally speaking, this year, this past season was not one of the years where you say it's the same team every year, the dynastic run, it's the same deal. This is not the same sport, FCS and FBS. It is college football, but they're not playing the exact same in regards to the transfer portal, and the prevalence of that in the FBS lends it to be so topsy-turvy based among 10, 15, 18 programs on a yearly basis. It's going to be the usual cast of characters. And then every now and then, we'll find an Indiana. We'll find a Vanderbilt. We'll find a TCU playing for a national title. And I'm all for that. I really am. I just want them to execute this well. I don't think we should have guaranteed spots, especially high-figure guaranteed teams from the SEC and Big Ten scratching out their guarantees every year. I don't think I like that. I really don't, because every year is so darn different. Like the ACC this year, you could have easily told me no ACC team gets in. Miami got in and absolutely proved that they were a really good team. Did they have a resume in which they should have gotten in? That's up for debate still. But I do think this allows the teams that are pretty darn good in a pretty darn good conference to get in, and teams that are elite in a bad conference to get in. And hopefully the debate around team 25, 26, 27 is not one that is crazy, crazy energetic. We'll see. It feels like a matter of time. 2014 playoff around the corner. Always curious your thoughts on that and everything here on the show. That's the good, the bad, the ugly. Score a brand new grill, Charboil 5 gas burning grill. $250 right now at your local Lewis Drug, Lewis Lawn and Garden. That's the good, the bad, the ugly. That's our show. We will talk to you tomorrow when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.